Hello, and welcome once again to NaturalDocRadio.com. I'm Janet Cimarelli, licensed clinical nutritionist, and I'm here this morning with Dr. Herb Slavin. Good morning, Dr. Slavin.
Good morning, Janet. And we'd like to bring you the information that's news to us in many cases, and we pass it along to you because I'm sure you know, as a listener, you haven't heard of it either. These are things that aren't being publicized widely in the media. And we've talked about things. I think the most important thing we can tell you to summarize everything, the more we read about what's going on with our food supply, is you should buy organic.
No question about it. There are so many questionable practices in our agriculture, in the growth process, in the delivery process, in the processing process. We really do need to focus on quality.
Now, in the past, we've spoken about genetically modified organisms or genetically engineered foods. And the reason they're bad for us is because for two reasons. One is there have been no studies on the safety of the new product that they've created with this genetic engineering. And the second is these crops are designed to withstand high doses of herbicides. And then we're eating these crops with the high doses of herbicides on it.
And we're feeding our livestock these crops.
So in order to avoid exposure, your own exposure to these herbicides, you want to avoid these crops because they're using high doses. What's happened over the years is the weeds are becoming resistant to these herbicides, and they have to use higher and higher dosages. But another development is now the FDA has approved the use of additional genetically engineered crops.
The FDA has also approved from Dow Chemical a new pesticide, herbicide, called Enlist Duo. And in addition to the glyphosate, which is a highly toxic component of the herbicide Roundup, there is another component also, along with the glyphosate, also having had this component as part of Agent Orange that was used during the Vietnam War and known to create any number of health issues among the people exposed to it.
Well, in the United States right now, they're using about 1.1 billion, with a B, pounds of pesticides each year.
Whoa!
And there are consequences to this, because not only are they, okay, let's say its intended purpose is to promote the growth of the desired crop and keep the weeds down to a minimum, and probably they're spraying other chemicals on them to keep insects down and other things that would destroy the crop. But it gets into the environment, and don't think it's not already on the food that you're eating that was sprayed with these resistant crops. And there's more and more mounting research that's linking the pesticides to a wide array of serious health problems. And, I talk to patients all the time, and they complain about the cost of organic food. They never complain about the cost of being sick.
And never complain also about these unusual symptoms that they might be experiencing that, okay, they're making them sick, and there really isn't any diagnosis, isn't any answer to their illnesses.
Well, that's true. I mean, so many illnesses out there, cancer being, let's put cancer at the top of the list. Why did I get cancer? I don't smoke. I don't drink. Am I sick?
I just spoke with a woman yesterday and stage 4 cancer, and her only symptom was a cough that wouldn't go away and was never diagnosed with anything until it had progressed to stage 4. Not a smoker, not any of those risk categories.
Let me say, for anybody listening, if you have a persistent cough, most coughs are going to go away in a couple of weeks. So let's say if you have a cough that doesn't go away for over a month, then get a chest x-ray. You know, find out what's going on. The only problem with that approach, I mean, that's the approach we use, but the problem is, let's say you find lung cancer. You know, we don't have great treatments for lung cancer. That's the problem. So you found the disease. We don't have great treatments. That's why what we talk
Dr.
about are ways
Slavin,
to prevent things.
I have to interrupt.
Yes.
Her cancer was not lung cancer. It was stomach cancer. She didn't have digestive system symptoms. She had a persistent cough. Interesting.
So, all right. So let's follow that one more step. So by the time it had to spread to her lungs then to give her the cough, I'm thinking.
It hasn't spread to her lungs. It has spread to her lymph.
All right, you know, so you do a chest x-ray. If the chest x-ray is negative, then the doctors will say, look, we don't have any blood tests, don't show anything. The chest x-ray doesn't show anything. Your cough is probably, could be an allergy. Or, you know, sometimes the diagnosis is delayed, but you have to look for it. You'll never find it if you don't look.
And interesting, because a persistent cough is one of the symptoms of heart disease in women.
Yeah, coughing is never normal. It's never normal to have a cough.
Okay, very important for people to hear that. So investigate.
But more importantly, you have to realize, and I think the statement was made years ago, that perhaps of all the treatments the medical science uses, only 10% of them are really effective. The vast majority of treatments that people undergo are not effective. And by that, we mean, well, it depends what criteria you use to determine effectiveness. If you're saying, well, you have a terminal illness and you go on to die, obviously the treatment didn't help you. If you have an illness that would not be considered terminal and you get better, did the treatment make a difference or would you have gotten better on your own?
Very, very interesting position.
I mean, a lot of times, you know, take this drug for 2 weeks. And you get better. And if you didn't take the drug for 2 weeks, you probably would have gotten better also.
You still get better.
So what we've seen, both Janet and myself over many years and observing people with illnesses and everything else, you know, we've come to the conclusion that it makes a lot more sense to do everything you can to try and keep yourself healthy and prevent illnesses. Because once you get sick, the treatments aren't there for you.
And the baseline for staying healthy and supporting the best function of your immune system and essentially best function of all of the systems of your body would be to use organic food choices as much as possible.
So we're getting back to the genetically modified foods. Pretty much every food on the shelves in a supermarket have some component of genetically modified foods, unless it's organic. Now, why do we want to avoid them? Because first of all, they're using more and more pesticides on these crops, so you're being exposed to more of these toxins. The risks from them include immune system cancers. What is that? That's like lymphoma, for example. Parkinson's disease.
Parkinson's disease has been an issue with regard to farmers and farm workers for years. Certainly, exposure to the toxic chemicals that are used on our crops in such a concentrated fashion with the farm workers, a big red flag.
Now, not all of the issues associated with eating these foods are going to cause cancer or Parkinson's disease. Many of them fall into the category of endocrine disruption or creating reproductive problems. I think. And here's the problem, too. So many people have reproductive problems and don't know it. So many people have endocrine problems and don't know it because they're accepting the symptoms they have as normal because it's just so common.
And I talk to people all the time about normal and what is common. So many people have it. It's common, but it is so far from normal.
But they confuse the two. If
Absolutely.
Something is common enough, oh, it must be normal then. You know, is a headache normal? Not really.
No, can be a sign of so many different things that
it's a
are
Tylenol
certainly
deficiency.
but dehydration, very common. Certainly, hormone imbalances contributing to headaches. I see that a lot.
It's a major problem, hormonal imbalances, but they don't just start in postmenopausal women. They start in women right after menarche, because that's when they start producing their hormones, and very frequently they can have an imbalance right from the beginning. What are the signs of a hormonal imbalance in premenopausal, young, healthy women? Well, the number one, what the issue is really, is estrogen dominance, meaning the body is not making enough progesterone, and the reason for that is stress. If your body is under stress, for whatever reason, your body is going to switch over to making cortisol, and progesterone is then not made in the same amount. You create estrogen dominance, and that causes the common symptoms that women experience before their period: breast tenderness, maybe moodiness, fluid retention. Those are all common. And here again, they're common but not normal.
Very, very true. It's so important for people to understand, not only are we exposed to very high amounts of these toxic chemicals, those toxic chemicals are applied to genetically modified crops. The genetically modified crops themselves are associated with quite a number of endocrine disrupting issues. So when there is that hormone impact, very significant that people need to understand the connection with the genetically modified crop. Fertility, in all of the different animal studies, there has been a significant impact on fertility as well as problematic gestation, delivery of very, very sickly offspring that don't survive for very long.
Now, here's the proof about the endocrine disruptors in the environment. A lot of them are from all this these herbicides that are sprayed on crops. Years ago in Florida, they were talking about the maturity of alligators, and that the females were maturing a lot faster than the males, and that would create a problem with reproduction. These endocrine disruptors are called xenoestrogens. They have estrogenic effects on women. And on men also. I mean, that could
because
be explained.
Because the male alligators were displaying poor development of genitalia.
So here are the causes that you should not ignore, because this is signs of hormonal imbalances. Fibrocystic breast disease. When you go to a doctor and he says, oh, you have fibrocystic breast disease, what does he tell you to do for that?
Stop drinking coffee.
He might say
that. First thing.
He might say that, but he doesn't say, by the way, let's check your hormones and see
Never.
If you're estrogen dominant.
Never.
This is one that
gets our attention, this one.
Yeah, increases body fat. You know, if you have a weight problem, is the doctor checking your hormones, particularly estrogen and progesterone, to see if that's playing a role? You know, after this, we'll go into thyroid a little bit, but these are the things that are frequently involved in these conditions, and they're ignored. Instead, I don't know what the doctor tells a patient now if you're overweight, or change how you eat, or does he give you a pill to lose weight?
The latest thing that I heard from someone speaking with me this past week, the doctor told her, close your mouth. And in just that tone and in just those words, which I thought was very arrogant.
I hope he was skinny himself. here's another one, especially before a period, women will complain of salt and fluid retention. Also,
I have a question about this, Dr. Slavin. Salt and fluid retention. So if you were to take a blood test during that time, would you say that you typically would see sodium levels high and potassium levels low? Or would it not show in the blood?
It wouldn't show in the blood, because the blood monitors or controls, your body has to control these things within very close parameters. So if you were taking in a lot of sodium, that would be associated with the fluid retention. It might be also associated with an increase in blood pressure.
Uh-huh.
But on a blood test, you wouldn't see it. You know, so you would have to look for other symptoms.
So I love that progesterone acts as a natural diuretic.
Well, all the symptoms we're mentioning now that are associated with estrogen dominance are all corrected when you give the patient enough progesterone to balance out the estrogen.
Important to say, not progestin. And typically the pharmaceutical prescription you might get would be progestin. It has to be plant source bioidentical progesterone, but the important point is bioidentical, that the molecule of your progesterone be identical to that produced by your body. When you pick on a pharmaceutical version of progesterone, the problems associated with that particular type of means of addressing estrogen dominance creates more problems than it solves. Really a significant issue. Now, Dr. Slavin, so many people on oral contraceptives, women being given estrogen to address menopause symptoms. How do we address that? And does that contribute to estrogen dominance?
Only from the standpoint that you're ignoring the problem. So it contributes to it because you haven't addressed it. You gave a symptomatic treatment. A lot of times a doctor will give women antidepressants for these problems that they complain of. In fact, one of the causes of estrogen dominance is depression and headaches. Another one is impaired blood sugar control. So, I mean, this goes hand in hand with, we mentioned earlier, with the increased body fat, maybe weight gain, blood sugar control. That's why it's so important that you make sure the hormones are balanced properly. And then, of course, the more serious problems, and this one, with estrogen dominance, is increased blood clotting. And you also see that as a risk factor when you take birth oral contraceptives or birth control pills. They talk about increased blood clotting. Women who are pregnant with higher hormone levels are more susceptible to blood clots. But there's very easy ways to reduce your risks here. First, check your hormone levels. And if you're not making enough progesterone to balance the estrogen, you take a natural progesterone.
So going back to the GMO crops and these pesticides, they compound the problem because they have an estrogenic effect. So we see all of these different problems associated with higher levels of estrogen circulating in the body, and instead of understanding the substances that we're exposed to increasing estrogen, we treat each one of these separately, mostly with pharmaceuticals.
Exactly. I don't want to imply that the estrogen dominance is what causes Parkinson's disease or lymphoma that we see with these herbicide exposure, the genetically modified foods. There are other toxic effects of these substances besides the hormonal effects that they have. And just to finish off the list, because these are the real important ones, when you're estrogen dominant, you're more prone to fibroids. Now, when you go to the doctor in your, say, your 40s, and he says, oh, you've got a fibroid. Well, that's because he ignored your hormonal imbalance for the last 20 years. You know, that could be all prevented by making sure you don't become estrogen dominant. But then more importantly, the estrogen dominance increases the risk of endometrial cancer or uterine cancer, as well as breast cancer. So, and this is something that I still see being ignored by physicians.
completely ignored, not an area of discussion among women, and it's an issue that needs to get far more attention. So women have a much greater ability to take care of themselves. We talk a lot about supporting your immune system to prevent infectious disease. We're now talking about the importance of hormone balance to prevent any number of different types of cancer, as well as problematic symptoms in day-to-day living, headaches, weight gain, water retention, and it is a very, very important topic.
And there's another important hormone in our bodies that is ignored, and I'll give you the reason for that in a moment, but it's the thyroid.
I want to know that reason, why it's ignored. So many people have so many of the thyroid dysfunction issues.
Well, it's not ignored because doctors don't do the test. It's because the test is not sensitive enough to pick up everybody with a thyroid problem. So when the doctor does the test on you and he says, oh, the tests are normal, your symptoms have nothing to do with your thyroid, and therefore I'm not going to treat it with thyroid support, I'm going to give you an antidepressant or whatever your symptoms are.
I'm looking at this checklist for hypothyroidism, and it's led me to make a self-diagnosis. Very common issues on this list, Dr. Slavin.
Definitely, but here's the point with any disease. You know, there's always a genetic component with any disease. If it's found frequently in your family, you may have an increased tendency to have that condition as well. Having said that, genetic diseases are probably only 10% of the time. The other 90% is something that you're doing to your body that is totally preventable or reversible.
It's interesting because when we're speaking about thyroid, one of the most common reasons I think it's reaching epidemic proportions in our population has to do with the very, very common exposure to chlorine and fluoride. And people don't understand how dangerous those exposures are.
Now, we're going to take that one step further. I mean, chlorine is in, everybody knows it's in all the water you drink.
Or shower in if you're drinking bottled water.
Or bathe in or swim in if you're swimming in a swimming pool. But they don't think about the fact that all the water that the cow you consume or the chicken you consume is drinking is also chlorinated. So really being exposed to chlorine. And think about this. Why do they put chlorine in the water? It's not to improve the taste.
I would say it certainly does not improve the taste.
It's to kill bacteria and viruses and parasites. And then when you drink the chlorinated water, it's going to disrupt your own ecology in your digestive tract. So that is another reason why it's very important to take probiotics, replacing the bacteria that, if you're drinking chlorinated water, can create. Now, here are some of the symptoms associated with a dysfunctional thyroid. And we mentioned a very common reason right now is your thyroid is dysfunctional if you're being exposed to fluoride and chlorine. And I would venture to say that there are very few people that aren't in that category.
Well, I speak to so many individuals when I'm looking at that list. Weight gain, inability to lose weight, even when you diet and exercise. I talk to so many women, and I'm imagining them having a conversation with their doctor, and their doctor kind of rolling their eyes, saying, yeah, sure, you're dieting. Yeah, sure, you're doing 1,200 calories a day. Yeah, sure, you're exercising. You know, just not believing them.
You know, a lot of people, though, like to blame the thyroid on their inability to lose weight. But I would think a lot of it has to do with just their poor eating choices.
There's no question about that. But there's also people that I see that they are very, very sincere. And I think that they really are dealing with dysfunctional thyroid, not necessarily able to be categorized according to blood tests with hyper or hypo, but their thyroid isn't doing what it's meant to do.
Another common complaint is constipation. Now, I don't want you to think that everyone who has constipation has a thyroid problem, and that's what where talking to the patient comes in and getting a feel for how the patient is doing. But your food choices play a role in constipation too. It's not just the thyroid.
For sure. Dr. Slavin and I are looking at a list, I'm going to say about 20 points long, and I would say if someone started going down that list, they would be able to check off more than 10. Now, if you were diagnosing some sort of thyroid problem, how many of these points would a person have to have before you would say, yep, it's your thyroid, or your thyroid is part of the problem? And we're talking about estrogen dominance here, as well as thyroid dysfunction.
Well, I would say no. If you just even just one of the things, you have to consider thyroid. For example, one of the number one causes of depression is a thyroid problem.
But does anyone have their thyroid very, very well tested, or do they just get a prescription for an antidepressant?
Well, here's the thing. There's something called a therapeutic trial. And this is where the doctor has to, you know, make some choices, because he's seeing a patient with all these symptoms. Another big one related to thyroid that bother women in particular is they're losing their hair.
Hair loss. And the other thing that I'm not seeing on that list, Dr. Slavin, is sleep disruption. When your thyroid works well, in general, your sleep tends to be more restful.
Exactly. And also, speaking of insomnia, giving balancing the progesterone out again, and the estrogen helps with sleep as well. But the point is, the doctor sees the lab test on the thyroid, it's all normal. Yet the patient has all these symptoms, and he's been trained to say, well, if the test is normal, the patient
must
be...
Your thyroid is fine.
It must be the patient's problem, not the test problem. But how do we, so this is where a therapeutic trial comes in, where you take you place the patient on thyroid hormone, even though the thyroid hormone test may be in a normal range, but probably in the low end of the normal range. And if the patient gets better and sees improvement, then I think you've sort of made the diagnosis that way. And that's used a lot in medicine. I'll give you another example. A patient has chest pain. You give a patient a nitroglycerin under the tongue, if it releases chest pain, there's a high certainty that that was angina. You know, so if you respond to the medication, that's a good sign that you're on the right track.
I want to go down the list of points with regard to thyroid dysfunction. Inappropriate weight gain, inability to lose weight even when you change your diet and you exercise, constipation, low body temperature, feeling of fatigue even though you've slept maybe 10 hours, feeling run down and lethargic, coarse, thin hair, your hair is brittle, might be falling out, your skin is very, very dry, a hoarse or gravelly voice, puffiness and swelling around the eyes and face. And I'm also going to say a little bit of information about the eyebrows. When the eyebrows are sparse, it's pretty good indication that the thyroid is dysfunctional. Achy joints, carpal tunnel, irregular menstrual cycles, trouble conceiving, depression, restlessness, changing moods, difficulty concentrating, feeling sad, losing interest in normal activities, and a little bit of memory issue going on. Those are so common. Don't you see so many people who come talk to you about one or more of those issues?
And now put yourself in the doctor's position with seeing a woman who is having fertility problems, prescribing a inexpensive hormone replacement, or doing in vitro fertilization.
Ooh, I think I know which one I would choose. The other thing is risk of miscarriage. In addition to the fertility trouble conceiving, more miscarriages in women who have a dysfunctional thyroid.
And also estrogen dominance. You know, you need
True.
Progesterone. So all these things play a role. Now, we mentioned earlier, you know, hair falling out, no sex drive, problems with memory. I mean, these are very common conditions. Are they all associated with the thyroid? Maybe, maybe not. But you have to consider that.
This is an interesting one that's on the list. Snoring and sleep apnea. I don't know that so many people would associate those two issues with thyroid. Sensitive to light, jumpy, strange feelings in your neck or throat. I talk to people all the time and they say, well, when I swallow, it feels like I have something stuck in my throat.
Well,
recurrent sinus infections. That is so common.
So in other words, you know, the goal that we shoot for is to make sure your body is functioning normally. I mean, that, you know, and how do you do that? You make sure the hormones are where they should be. You know, the doctor, when you go to a doctor, he checks your blood count, he checks your serum chemistries. He should be checking your hormones to make sure everything is appropriate. And before he starts prescribing medications, correct any functional problems that you have instead of before you add, you know, drugs people don't have a hesitation to take because they call them drugs or pharmaceuticals.
And a very respected physician has given you that drug.
Right, but when they called them poisons, you know, people were afraid to take them. So I and that's what you want. You have to think of them as poisons, because if you were to read the list of adverse effects for many drugs, you wouldn't want to take them. I mean, even you listen to or watch the commercials on television for drugs, and they even talk about death from taking the drug. Now, if that isn't the definition of a poison, I don't know what is. So, you know, you want to. That's why it's so important to take these natural approaches before you resort to pharmaceutical approaches.
And so today, I hope we've enlightened a lot of our visitors to naturaldocradio.com and given you some certainly food for thought and possibly some insight into solutions that are supportive of your good health rather than directing you just down this road of more and more and more pharmaceuticals.
And I'm going to see with our website manager if we can post these lists that we've talked about on today's show. So if you go there, you can, you know, take a look at these lists for yourself.
What a great idea. And so to everyone who's tuned in, thanks for looking up Dr. Slavin and myself. And we look forward to sharing much more of health-supporting information with you. Bye-bye.